This is Washington Watch Weekly, your voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. Now here's our host, the president of the Family Research Council, Tony Perkins.
Hello and welcome to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Thanks so much for being with us. Coming up on today's program, the U.S. Supreme Court could correct one of the most egregious court rulings on religious freedom ever handed down by a court. Alliance Defending Freedom's Jim Campbell will have the details. And President Obama was in damage control this week as he tried to fix his "read my lips" statement of, if you like your health care plan, you can keep your health care plan. Did the president have the authority to change the rules? And if so, is it too little too late to keep hundreds of thousands of Americans from losing their health care policies? Congressman Steve Scalise of Louisiana will be with us. Also, Congressman Ted Poe of Texas joins me to discuss our recent trip to Israel and the threat that Iran poses not only to Israel, but to the U.S. Be sure and visit TonyPerkins.com for more information on today's guest and to sign up for information as it pertains to faith, family, and freedom coming out of Washington, D.C., specific action steps that you can take to defend faith, family, and freedom. Well, as we have covered extensively on this program, the attack on Elaine Photography in New Mexico was one of the most egregious court decisions I've ever seen. Now, this couple was under attack for their support of natural marriage. They were hit with a fine by the New Mexico Human Rights Commission for declining to photograph a same-sex commitment ceremony because of their Christian faith. Now, this went all the way to the Supreme Court in New Mexico that ruled against the couple. On Wednesday, I was joined by Alliance Defending Freedom attorney Jim Campbell, who was co-counsel in this case that may end up before the United States Supreme Court. Now, I'm not given to exaggeration, so I don't think I was exaggerating, but I'll allow you to correct me if I'm wrong. But essentially, what they were saying is that you have to check your Christian faith at the gate of the marketplace. Is that essentially what the court ruled there in this case?
That is essentially what the court is saying. And this idea that free people can be compelled by law to compromise the very religious beliefs that inspire their lives as the price of citizenship is an unbelievably chilling and unprecedented attack on freedom. The reality of it is that our constitutional rights are not giving them up is not the price of citizenship. Instead, protecting those rights is the prize of citizenship in this country.
Absolutely. I mean, this idea, this is where I see such hypocrisy in the left, where they say, going back to this just small portion, I think it was, I don't know if it was 90 pages, I remember reading it, but it was a long opinion. So as to leave space for other Americans who believe something different. What about what this couple believes? Is there not room for what they believe in the public square, in the marketplace? How come it's Christians who have to surrender their beliefs?
I think you've hit on something very important, which is the fact that this is chilling for everyone. It's chilling for Christians because this case specifically involves Christians and Christian beliefs, but it should be chilling for people of different perspective and different views as well. In this case, it involves a Christian wedding photographer who didn't want to do a certain event and didn't want to promote messages that she disagreed with and that conflicted with her faith. But tomorrow, the case could be a photographer who identifies as homosexual and doesn't want to take pictures of some type of a pro-traditional marriage event or some other event that communicates messages that photographer doesn't agree with and doesn't want to promote. So this cuts both ways, and it's a chilling attack on freedom for all Americans, regardless of their political or religious beliefs.
Or Jim, it could be an atheist photographer who is hired by a church to come in and photograph some kind of a religious event, who says, you know, really, I just don't want to be there. I feel uncomfortable about it. And then you're forcing them to go into a situation that they simply are uncomfortable with or don't believe in. I mean, I fail to see where that is in keeping with the principles of America and our freedom to either practice our faith, to choose to practice our faith, or choose to have no faith at all.
That's absolutely right, as well as, and this is something that our recent filing with the Supreme Court focuses on, the fact that here we're dealing with expression. When mm-hmm. a photographer takes a picture, a photographer is an artist, particularly a photographer like Elaine Huguenin, and they are expressing messages through the pictures that they take. Those pictures are showed to people, and those viewers glean messages, and they glean messages of approval and endorsement of the ceremony that's being depicted. So you're forcing an American to express messages contrary to their faith. And that brings a whole nother level of constitutional violations into play here. And it really emphasizes the need for the U.S. Supreme Court to step in and to correct the constitutional violations that have occurred.
Jim, let me ask you this. What implications does this have for our First Amendment rights if the court does take the case or if the court does not take the case?
Well, if the court does take the case, it would be a significant decision that would determine how far the government can reach in compelling its citizens to express messages that they disagree with. So that's on the one hand. On the other hand, if the Supreme Court doesn't take the case, this is a decision that came out of one state, and it's sort of confined to that state. But it is still a unique decision. It's the only decision addressing an issue of this kind, so many other courts might look to it for precedent and guidance in the future. So it is a decision that is very dangerous. It is a decision that needs to be corrected, and we're hopeful that the U.S. Supreme Court will do just that.
And Jim, one of the things we're seeing, there are more and more cases like this that are popping up across the country. Now, this one was kind of at the head of the pack. This has been in the works for, I don't know, 3 or 4 years, and it's been a while, as this has made its way all the way through to the state Supreme Court. There are other cases around the country where you've got photographers, you've got bakers, you've got florists that have not progressed to this level of adjudication. So this could very well be a precedent-setting case.
That's correct. This situation involving Elaine Huguenin and her husband Jonathan is not unique. This is a new wave of cases, and the Supreme Court is being asked to determine whether the states throughout the country can broadly apply these so-called public accommodation non-discrimination laws in a way to public business owners who are simply trying to live and do business consistently with their beliefs.
Again, that was Alliance Defending Freedom attorney Jim Campbell. To find out more about this case, go to TonyPerkins.com. Coming up after the break, Congressman Steve Scalise of Louisiana joins us to look at what the president said this week in terms of if you like your health care plan, you can keep it. That's coming up after the break. Don't go away. We're back with more of the weekend edition of Washington Watch right after this.
America's first liberty, the freedom of religion, is being threatened. It's being pushed out of our public life, out of our schools, and even out of our churches. FRC has partnered with Liberty Institute to document these events. Our new report is titled, Undeniable, the Survey of Hostility to Religion in America. It's not exhaustive, but it records almost 1,200 incidents of hostility to religion. We invite you to download your copy at religioushostility.org.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Thanks so much for being with us. There was no shortage of news coming from the White House this week. HHS Secretary Kathleen Tobias released the abysmal health care enrollment figures. Just over 25,000 people have purchased plans through the government exchange. One congressman quipped that at this rate, the administration would hit their projected enrollment target in 800 years. But the president was also in full damage control, announcing he would change the rules so people could keep their plans for another year. Now, does the president have the authority to change the rules? And if so, is it too little, too late to help the thousands of families who have been notified that their plans are being canceled? Congressman Steve Scalise of Louisiana joined me on Thursday to talk about it. Well, I saw your comments today regarding the president. You basically said this is like someone burning down your house and then showing up with an empty bucket saying, I'm here to help.
Yeah, and the worst part is he's showing up saying, I'm here to help, and oh, by the way, you had a lousy house anyway. because that's what the president's done is, you know, with this the law, but now how the law is being implemented in terms of people getting these cancellations, millions of people, these elitists in Washington, from President Obama to Secretary Sebelius and others, sit there smugly and say, oh, look, you know, you're losing your plan, but you had a lousy plan.
Yeah.
We didn't think you had a good enough plan. Well, then he'll say, wait a minute, I like my plan. I don't care what you think of my plan. I like my plan. It was good for my family. And so that's what the president's saying is, oh, look, the reason they canceled you anyway and the reason that we made your health care plan ineligible is because it wasn't good enough. That should be the patient and the doctor making these decisions. Family should be making these decisions, not government bureaucrats.
You're right. In fact, I'll quote the president from his comments today. He was making an analogy between your health care plan and a used car. He said, quote, well, the problem with the grandfather clause that we put in place is that it's almost like we said to folks, you've got to buy a new car, even if you can't afford it right now. And sooner or later, folks are going to start trading in their old cars. But, you know, we don't need, if their circumstances are such, for now at least, they want to keep that old car. Even if the new car is better, we should be able to give them that option. I mean, like you said, like your plan is inferior. The problem with this is that once you are forced, and everyone eventually under this scheme will have to trade in their insurance, their old car, to carry forth this analogy of the president. And the problem is the only thing you'll be able to buy is a Pinto, which is liable to explode at any moment.
And it doesn't even take gasoline. It's an electric car. You know, Tony, again, getting back to the arrogance of this kind of statement, you know, this kind of elitist Washington knows best mentality, what it says is, you know, yeah, you're going to have to buy a new car eventually. The thing is, when I buy a new car, I want to pick out that car. I want to buy a car that's the right car for my family at that time. I don't want to have to get government approval from some unelected bureaucrat in Washington to go buy a car I don't want. And that's what we've got right now with Obamacare. Is not, number one, you know, the president's promise was clearly broken. It's been broken millions of times over now. People are losing their good health care. But then they're going to these exchanges if they can get through this broken website, and they're finding out that to get a replacement, to get something that the president thinks is good enough for you, you're going to pay a whole lot more, and you're probably going to lose the doctor that you like. And yet they're going to sit there and say, see, that's better for you. And you're going to have to pay for things like sex change operations in California and some of this stuff that you don't, not only do you not want for your family, it violates a lot of your religious conscience. Objections that you have to these plans.
Well, let me ask you this, Congressman. Does the president have the authority just to just say, hey, wait a minute, I'm changing the program here and you can keep your health care plan?
Of course not, Tony. And you talked about this at the beginning of the segment. The president, we all took civics. You know, the way laws work, the Congress debates and passes laws. The president can sign or veto and then ultimately implements the law. The president can't change the law with some magic wand. And I think he really does believe he has this power. And so when he gave this press conference today, which was just embarrassing, you saw him just sitting there at the podium almost naked without a teleprompter, not knowing what to say when the media, of all people, the liberal press was asking him tough questions. And he didn't know how to answer the questions. And yet if you look at what's happening, you know, the insurance company are saying, we can't go in and reinstate your plan because the law says that plan is not eligible now. And so the president can't just undo the law. So while he might have said, hey, don't worry, you can do this, the problem is those insurance companies that canceled your plan don't have the legal authority to go back and make it available again because the law, those plans are in violation of Obamacare.
Well, then that brings the next question. Even if the president could wave this magic wand, if he were the tooth fairy and he could say, hey, it's okay, is it too little too late?
Well, it's too little too late for millions of families because they've already lost their plan. You know, once you get the cancellation notice, that wasn't a decision that was made last week by your health care provider. That's something that, you know, this law has been on the books since 2010. You know, and the president acts as if, hey, don't worry, you know, just look the other way about this part of the law, and tomorrow you can just reissue the policy. These decisions were made a year ago when people looked at the law and said, okay, I've got to now comply with this law. You know, Obamacare is the law of the land. How do we comply with it? Well, that means this policy is ineligible. We're going to have to cancel those people's plans. And, you know, the speech doesn't change that.
Congressman Scalise, before we let you go, Steve, I want you to just briefly touch on the Republican Study Committee alternative. Many people in the media in particular say, well, the Republicans don't have an alternative. They don't care about health care. They don't care about people who don't have health care. In fact, that's not true. Going back years, the Republicans have put plans on the table. In fact, had no voice in Obamacare when it was forced through the Congress. But you now have put forward an alternative that's a market-based, consumer-driven, patient-focused plan.
Yeah, Tony. And in fact, when I became chairman of RSC in January, one of the things I wanted to do was have a true alternative to Obamacare. To say not only are we against Obamacare, we want to repeal it, but we also want to replace it with market-based reforms that restore that doctor-patient relationship, that actually lower costs of health care instead of raising them. And so we worked with a number of medical doctors in Congress and other professionals, and we put together a bill called the American Healthcare Reform Act. It's very market-based. It allows people to buy across state lines. It allows people to have a lot more freedom and choice in health care, where, you know, you can join with other small businesses if you're a small business to get the buying power of a big company. Families,
and you don't have to use a website to get it either.
You don't have to use a website. You can literally just, you know, you find a good plan you like your current plan, you can keep it. But if you find a better plan for your family, you can get that too. We protect life. We ensure that religious freedom is intact. And the bill, by the way, Tony, just broke the 100 co-sponsor threshold. We have about 106 members of Congress now that have co-sponsored this bill because they realize that, you know, and it starts, by the way, by repealing Obamacare. So we don't try to fix this broken law. We uproot it and say, let's start over and do it right. And people really like that idea, the fact that we've got a good common sense solution to lower costs in health care from a market-based approach without the taxes and mandates that are making Obamacare so unworkable.
All right. Well, we'll direct people your way to find out more about that. Steve, thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, it was great to be with you, Tony. Thanks.
Again, that was Congressman Steve Scalise of Louisiana's 1st Congressional District. He is the chairman of the Republican Study Committee. To find out more about the health care plan that the Republicans have put forward, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. While you're there, be sure and sign up for my daily update and the alerts that we put out from Washington that give you practical action steps on how you can defend faith, family, and freedom. All right, when we come back from the break, Congressman Ted Poe of Texas will join me. He was with me last week in Israel, and we're going to be talking about that and the threat that Iran poses not only to Israel, but to the U.S. as well. All that's coming up right after this.
Men and women are different. This used to be a self-evident, uncontroversial sort of statement, but today's elites, including the American Psychological Association, see the world quite differently. In 2011, the APA reported that, quote, gender identity refers to a person's internal sense of being male, female, or something else, end quote. But this flexible and subjective view of gender has profound implications for the way law, society, and family all function. But what if men and women are created equally valuable but inherently different? And what if those differences matter for marriage, for kids, and for our communities? FRC has a new resource titled Complementarity in Marriage, What It Is and Why It Matters. This paper explains some of the scientific differences between men and women and the moral case for maintaining a natural view of marriage. To download this paper, visit FRC.org.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Thanks so much for being with us. To find out more about the topics we've covered today, go to TonyPerkins.com. Well, the United States has no greater ally in the entire world than Israel. And Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has continually warned of the threat that a nuclear-powered Iran would pose to Israel. Well, talking of lifting the strict sanctions on Iran have momentarily stalled due to no agreement being made last weekend in Geneva. But the U.S. actions lately haven't been very reassuring to Israel. Congressman Ted Poe of Texas joined me this past Tuesday to discuss that. Congressman, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. Good to talk to you.
Well, have you adjusted? It's about midnight Israel time, so I don't know if you still got the jet lag or you doing okay?
I still got the jet lag. I got the days and the hours all messed up, so.
Well, but you know, but y'all have messed up what the problem is. It looks like the administration is the one that's disoriented when it comes to this issue of Iran, the lifting of the sanctions, and backing off just when it looked like they're beginning to make some progress.
You're exactly correct. The sanctions finally have started working. As you know, Congress has continued to add sanctions, finally added some sanctions that made a difference. It affects the Iranian economy. The GDP has dropped. Its oil production has slowed down because of the sanctions on re-importing refined gasoline and the banking sanctions. And so now the Iranians find themselves in a place where their economy is suffering, and they come to the United States and say, we're ready to talk. We're not really interested in stopping our nuclear program. We just want to hold back on it for a little while if you lift the sanctions. So they want to freeze, but they don't want to abandon nuclear weapons. That is the issue. Kerry, on the other hand, said, hey, that sounds like a pretty good deal to us. And as you stated, when we met with Prime Minister Netanyahu last Thursday night, he made it clear that they have to disassemble their nuclear weapons. They can't just stop production of them and then start up again in a few years or a few months. It affects Israel. But Iran, through their supreme leader, their goal is to eliminate the United States. We are the great Satan. And that's why they want nuclear weapons. And Americans just need to realize the truth that this is the goal of the Iranians. The deal that Secretary of State was offering the Iranian government was a deal they loved. Thank God for the French who came in and said, we're not going to accept that deal. And so that deal is, as you have said, is not going to happen unless something changes. And so Iran is a threat to Israel. It's a greater threat to the United States down the road.
In fact, in that meeting with the prime minister, he came out right after he was briefed on the details of this negotiation with the P5 plus one. And he said this would be the deal of the century for Iran. And he was very critical. In fact, I was, you know, the Israelis are usually pretty reserved. But I found on this trip last week and the ones we met with that they were pretty outspoken in their call for the United States to really not get in their way of defending themselves.
You're exactly correct, Tony. Israel sees themselves on the front line. They're the closest country to Iran, a lot closer than we are. They see an immediate threat. The distance between the two countries is very short. As soon as the Iranians have nuclear weapons and rockets, missiles that can fire them, they'll fire them at Israel. But their long-range goal is to get intercontinental ballistic missiles to shoot at the United States. They are developing nuclear weapons. We need to ask ourselves and be realistic, why are they developing them? Well, they want to use them against Israel and the United States. The folks in Israel see that their whole existence is threatened, and it's even threatened more with this real bad deal, as Prime Minister Netanyahu told us last Thursday.
And Congressman Ho, you're in the know on a lot, as you are the chairman of the subcommittee on terrorism, and so you're tracking these things. But there's some things I heard last week that were a little surprising to me, and you've made reference to some of this in your comments, that Iran is not just an Israeli problem, it's an American problem, and Iran is not satisfied with just trying to dominate and intimidate the Middle East. They have divided the globe up in sectors, and they have commands established even in South America where they're trying to advance their cause and their influence there.
That's exactly correct. Iran's threat to the world is not just their nuclear capability of destroying the West. They are already using the conventional terrorists throughout the world, even in South America, throughout the globe. They sponsor worldwide terrorism through their proxy puppet terrorist group, Hezbollah. And Hezbollah is located in many places in all of the continents of the United States, except maybe Australia and Antarctica. And they are causing mischief throughout the world, in many, many countries. in a conventional way, the old terrorist way. They strike when they think that it's appropriate for them to meet some tactical objective. So we have a double threat with Iran, the overall global threat of nuclear weapons, but the specific threat in each country of Hezbollah acting and being sponsored by Iran, funded by Iran, trained by Iran to cause terrorist attacks in countries throughout the world.
Now, Congressman Poe, what do we know about the new front man for Tehran, Hossein Rouhani? Is this guy a more moderate guy, or is he just a softer-spoken radical?
The supreme leader of Iran picks the people who are allowed to run for president. So they are all the supreme leader's guys. He picks 7 out of 700. Well, of course, they all adopt the philosophy of the supreme leader. And the supreme leader's goal is destruction of Iran, Israel and the United States. Rouhani's a smooth talker. I call him a snake oil salesman. Unlike Ahmadinejad, who used rhetoric that was very volatile, and a lot of people in the West thought he was, you know, kind of a nutcase, but he was very vocal about how he hated the U.S. and Israel. Rouhani, I think, feels exactly the same way, only he has toned down the rhetoric, but his goals are exactly the same way, and he is, as I like to say, puts one arm around the United States to talk and stabs us in the back with the other arm. So he's just a smooth talker. He's just as bad, maybe worse, than Ahmadinejad, the president that he replaced, because the supreme leader picks the president of Iran.
Congressman Ted Poe, thanks so much for being with us. Appreciate your insights on this, and did enjoy the trip with you, and enjoyed getting to know your wife, Carol, as well.
Well, good talking to you, Tony. Good seeing you.
Again, that was Congressman Ted Poe of Texas. To find out more about what Congressman Poe is working on, go to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links over. And again, let me encourage you, if you're not already receiving our alerts that in real time keep you up to date on what's happening here in our nation's capital and giving you some very specific action steps so that you can help in defending faith, family, and freedom, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com, and sign up right there on the website. Well, folks, that's all the time we have for today. Thanks so much for being with us. I pray that you have a great weekend. And remember the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul. When we've done everything that we can do, when we've prayed, we've prepared, and we've taken our stand, we're supposed to just keep standing.
Washington Watch Weekly is a donor-supported ministry of the Family Research Council.